Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm Deanna Butu. This past weekend, on the 18th of March, Palestinians all over the West Bank participated in the 8th Palestine Marathon in the city of Bethlehem after a two-year hiatus due to the pandemic. Established in 2013, the Palestine Marathon takes place with races including a marathon, 42 kilometers long, a half marathon at 21 kilometers, and 5 and 10 kilometer races as well. The marathon requires a 42 kilometer stretch within occupied Palestine, but due to Israeli checkpoints and the apartheid wall, Palestinians instead run back and forth across Bethlehem four times in order to make the 42 kilometers. The race begins at Manger Square at the Church of the Nativity and continues throughout the city, passing refugee camps and along the apartheid wall. The marathon was started by the Right to Movement campaign to highlight movement restrictions in occupied Palestine. Palestinians live under some of the harshest movement restrictions, whether it's walking or driving through Israeli checkpoints daily, or being required to obtain permits to move throughout the country or to go between the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The aim of the Right to Movement campaign is simple: to highlight the limitations of Palestinian movement and to demand Palestinian freedom. In 2017, the Palestinian Authority took over control of the marathon and has been running it ever since. We speak to the co-founder of the Right to Movement campaign, George Zidan, an unsung hero who has inspired so many people to start running, and who tells us about how the Right to Movement campaign came to be, how he thought of the marathon itself, and what freedom of movement means for Palestinians.
We were talking earlier about when the Right to Movement started the campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Okay. So we started in 2012. It was an initiative of a few Danish activists and a few Palestinian activists. We didn't call it Right to Movement back then. The name, what we had in mind is the idea was we needed to do something that grabs attention at a big scale of people, large scale of people, to the problems and the limitations that the occupation causes in our daily life through something that people can resonate with. And we were marathon, just bringing people together, a large sum of people. It's fun, it's exciting. And that was where we started. We said we would do the first marathon in Palestine. I remember how I just didn't think that it was something like, what was a marathon? You know, there would be, I grew up here in the West Bank and every day there was a marathon. But our understanding of a marathon was a very different. It was like if there's a 2K race or a 2 mile race, people will call it, any running race would be called a marathon. So we didn't even, like, we didn't understand what is a marathon. So we said, okay, and said, George, we would like to find 42 kilometers for the trail of the marathon. And I'm like, yeah, sure, we can find 42 kilometers. And then I had no idea in my mind what was like, what would be 42 kilometers like, how. And then we started driving around in Bethlehem, just like on the car meter, and then everything we're getting, like we're going everywhere from every corner of the city, and we got 8-9 kilometers. And then, okay, this is, we have a situation. And that's where we started thinking about highlighting this issue of right to movement. So we cannot do the race in area B or C because we cannot jeopardize that an Israeli soldier who might just be having a bad day decide to intervene and stop. Not that they cannot do it in area A, but at least we are within the PA administered areas in area A, and it's within the control, supposed control of the Palestinian Authority. We're limited to this area of the West Bank, which is quite small, especially
18%.
Approximately 18%, and then Bethlehem specifically has, I think 70% of Bethlehem is on area C, in area C, and it's. So we ran into this issue of how we're gonna complete a trail, and that's where we said. We actually spoke to a family in a village, Al-Khadr village, to let us go through their backyard. and extend the trail of the race to 10.5 kilometers. And then, so you start from the Church of Nativity, the idea that was you start at like the square, the public square in the city, a famous spot, and then you go to the end of Area A, and you pass by every corner in the city, and you finish 10.5 kilometers. So if you want to do a half marathon, you go back and forth, and if you want to do a full marathon, you have to do the same route 4 times, A, B, back to A, and arrive to the finish line, which is, if anybody is a runner, will understand how hard it is to arrive to the finish line, feel like you have finished, because part of running is mentally, a lot of part of it is mental, and then, oh my gosh, I have to start and go again and do the whole thing again. And we wanted just to give people an experience of understanding what is it running under occupation, what is life under occupation. We did not create the trail for people to experience it for one day. It resembles the reality of our everyday life. You know, when you go to school in Palestine, where we can even build or expand our cities is limited by the Israeli occupation. And when you run the marathon in Palestine, you're running by the apartheid wall, by Israeli checkpoints, by land that has been confiscated or will be confiscated for settlements, through Palestinian refugee camps. And it's the same way you go to school, it's the same way you go to work in Palestine, it's the same way you run. So we wanted to give people an opportunity to come and experience a professional day, a happy day, enjoying a happy festive day, but also understand the situation and the violations that we experience in our everyday life.
So just to be clear, you couldn't find a place in Palestine that was 42 kilometers straight.
So we had, our intent was to do the race in Bethlehem, because Bethlehem is a very famous city, and Bethlehem has the capacity to host tourists. Like, we may have been able to do it in Jenin on a straight. I'm not sure. That's what we always assume. That's an assumption that we always make, that maybe we would have been able to make it in Jenin. But I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
also, there's no big open space. There's no big major square where people would be able to.
Exactly, and the idea of doing the race in the most acknowledged city, if you're anywhere from New Zealand or from Madagascar to Canada, you would understand Bethlehem somehow. And it's the city that has hotel rooms. Like, we cannot do it in Jenin. Jenin does not have the infrastructure to take that many tourists. So we were kind of stuck, but in a good way, with Bethlehem. And then stuck in a bad way with the situation on the ground and the reality that we are so limited in where we can run. And this is something we used to. You know, even when we train here, you train outside your home in the same street, because you don't know if you end up like going in a wrong direction, you will end up being close by settlers, you put yourself at risk, your family wouldn't feel okay with that. They would feel like, whenever I was living with my parents and I will go on a run, they're always like, be careful if you're by the settlement, be careful, and it's just right outside my house. So it's something like in the back of your head. Yeah.
So when you started the marathon, I'm sure you didn't anticipate all of the problems. What were some of the problems other than the just physical, trying to find which is a problem, and it's, I think, a unique problem.
Yeah.
Trying to find a trail. What was the next, or trying to find a path, excuse me, or some of the other problems that you faced?
Some of it were related to the fact that we don't have autonomy over our borders. Oh. So we cannot control if runners who register can actually come into Bethlehem and participate in the race. Because what could happen is, and it has happened in many situations, is that the Israeli occupation authorities will prevent runners who participate from abroad to enter and come to the race. So there's always this fake story why they're coming for pilgrimage reasons. And if someone just shows up without having a connection with us or a contact with us, we cannot control to give them the story, the between brackets story that they should come up with. So that was very difficult. We were very challenged as well in terms of runners coming from Gaza. We organized the race for 4 years, and only one out of the 4 years, the Israeli occupation allowed runners from Gaza to come and participate in the marathon for 3 years. They would reject the permits with no premises, with no. It's very hard for Gazans to be anywhere except for Gaza. So it was, yeah, it was something sad that we always ran into. And I think just one of the things that we really worked hard. So we started the marathon, and then we started, like, the easiest way to understand it is like a byproduct of running groups. And these running groups, which we have now 5 active in Haifa, Jaffa, Bethlehem, Jerusalem, and Ramallah, are the idea is like we get people to train for the marathon, to come and introduce a culture of running among in these cities, and try to get people excited about the event. And one of the things that we really worked hard on and has been the focus of our group is to create an atmosphere, an environment that is welcoming and friendly for Palestinian women to be out doing sports in the street. You know, we live in a patriarchal, male-dominated society that is not very much open for women to do anything they would like to do, not in terms of running only. Very controlling, and we what we tried to do through our groups is being conscious of this, try to introduce this community environment where we make the women feel that they're very welcome, the safe space for them to be there, be able to run in the street, being respected as equally and as their male counterpart. So the idea is to have Palestinian men and women run in equal numbers.
One of the things that struck me the most was just how festive the marathon was in the years that I participated. The festive, and not just festive, but families joining, saw lots of little kids, and that was really lovely. It was one of the few places and spaces where you saw just all walks of life, all ages, gathered together.
We tell people you come and you enjoy a professional base, but with the Palestinian touch. You know, we're on the like finish line dancing debke at the stations. People are giving the runners Palestinian dates from Jericho. Right. You know, you will get a boring gel if you're running New York City Marathon. We're giving you Palestinian exotic dates from the fresh from the farms, and people are wearing all sorts of traditional stuff, and it's a happy day. It's like a happy day. Like people are having fun, everybody's excited, everybody's motivated. I think we need a lot more of these days in Palestine, considering how depressing and how difficult it is to be here and to live here.
But your work doesn't stop just at the marathon. The marathon is now run by the Palestinian Authority, but your work hasn't stopped.
Correct.
So yeah. What is it that you're, what is the Right to Movement doing now?
So in 2017, it was the first version of the race that was organized by the Palestinian Authority. We're a volunteer group, and everybody involved is putting time passionately towards really maintaining what we do and focusing on this happy lifestyle that we try to introduce. So we have the 5 active running groups that are led, each is led by a female and male leader. And we promote these events on a weekly basis for free. Things like hiking, running, yoga classes, boot camp classes in the different cities. And we try to encourage people to show up and come, and from different levels, different ages, and have a good training, have fun together. That's been something that we have been doing consistently since the marathon and until now. We also do what we call like some innovative advocacy. I don't want to use the same advocacy because I think it has been misused and abused in many ways, but some international awareness stuff through creative sports-related issues. So we ran in 2016 over Christmas Eve. We had 22 Palestinian runners, 11 Marys and 11 Josephs, running, wearing traditional clothes similar to what I don't know how Mary and Joseph, what were they wearing 2,000 years ago? I'm not going to claim that, but something similar. And we ran in, like, as couples, as Mary and Joseph, relay run through from Nazareth to Bethlehem. The idea was that we will document how, after 2016 years, what the trip would be like for Mary and Joseph, how many settlements they have to pass, how many checkpoints they have to cross, what they have to walk and run or walk by the wall, and how it would have been different, trying to draw attention on the famous story, not for biblical reasons, but for the fact that people will understand the story and try to illustrate it to people, what is it like after 2016 years. So we arrived in the Church of Nativity, and we had, yeah, it was also a festive. And then we did a campaign in Silicon Valley with a nonprofit with a 501c3 called Rebuilding Alliance, where we worked with a congresswoman, Anna Esho, I think her name, Democrat, on challenging tech giants in terms of their navigation of Palestinian, specifically Palestinian villages in AISE. There were about 542 villages that were not included in the navigation at that time, in 2016. And we made a strong push. We went to their campuses. We did the run between their campuses, and we worked on lots of campaigning activities. They were arguing that this is, like, Palestine is not recognized as a country by the U.S. and, like, many international, like, European countries, etc. So they cannot have the full navigation of these villages, or not recognized as, like, Palestinian villages. And at the same time, they had every Israeli illegal settlement that has not been recognized as legal by anyone except by the Trump administration, and they had them fully navigated to the every small corner and bakery that exists in these settlements. So we were trying to demonstrate the double standards. They said, okay, you don't want to recognize our villages who are existing in reality, and you're omitting it from your maps, but at the same time you're existing these Israeli settlements. We managed to get some progress done on this. We had it wasn't also the work alone of Right to Movement and this congresswoman. There were other Palestinian organizations that were also involved, like the Applied Research Institute of Jerusalem and others. And then they successfully navigated around 230, I think. I'm sure of the 542, I think 230 villages they navigated it in their navigation, included the name. And just the basic minimum, just include that this village exists. Our whole, like, slogan, we were afraid of the campaign, that we were afraid that the technology would change the reality, because they exist in reality, but they don't exist in technology. And other campaigns we've been working. We did a great campaign with UNRWA, USA. We sent Palestinian runners to run from New York City to the Congress. Was during the United Nations November. This was a November United Nations event. And delivering messages to Congress members in terms of funding. It was during 2018, during the Trump, when he stopped the funding of the UNRWA and all the attempt to remove the Palestinian refugee. We're totally not focused on the funding, but on the attempt of removing the Palestinian refugee matter from any future solution by terminating the presence of an organization, the only organization that is responsible for providing food and education and healthcare for these 5.5 million Palestinian refugees. So we did the campaign. I think we raised $50,000 for UNRWA USA, and that was great as well. So just putting sports, putting our legs in action, trying to generate interest and differences in the people see this place.
So what's next? Any future plans?
Yeah, we have been, the focus has been now on a Swedish concept called blogging. The idea is that, it's funny when we say this, because this is not what we do in Palestine at all, when you understand our context. So in Sweden, people will be running in the forest, and they will clean while they're running. So the idea is like you're squatting down to pick up trash. So we said we would do this concept here in Palestine, but we were astonished. I shouldn't say astonished because I'm from here. So I understand that this is the reality, but the awareness on preservation of environment and protecting, being like leaving no trace behind you is when you're out and having a picnic or something is not yet there. So we are challenging our own community with that, with organizing events and in different parts of the West Bank, in like in Makhrour area, in Bethlehem, in Kremizan area, in Bejak, the places where people go for walks and can be suitable for this. In the city center in Ramallah, Duwar al-Manara, Manara roundabout, taking calling for volunteers to come and remove trash from the ground. So it ends up being mostly squatting and running and squatting with the situation. But it's also that people have this feeling that because you know, the land, our land is occupied, that it's kind of not my responsibility. And I see the logic sometimes, but it's a dangerous thought because we have to own up and be responsible ourselves in dealing with our own shit, excuse my French. And this is what we are trying to do now.
Well, George, thank you. You're one of the unsung heroes.
No.
I thank you for your motivation, for your inspiration, for your energy, for your passion, for the vision, for getting us moving and getting us thinking about Palestine in ways that are way beyond just our own little cities and towns. Thank you. Thank you very much, Richard.
No, thank you. It makes me thank you for saying this, and we really appreciate it. And we hope to see you with us, and we invite people to come and you know, get moving in Palestine. Find it's a great country and a great place to be, and there's lots of things to learn and experience when you come here. It takes only people coming to visit here to understand what they have been fed over and over in their past years is propaganda, and that there's only there's two unequal sides, an oppressor and the oppressed. And they I think it would be easy for people to know where they're associating, which side they're associating with. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.